Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I am Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We are here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
Yes, we are. And it is a special place.
It is an incredibly special place. I feel that every day that I'm here, which is almost every day.
I mean, and even in these winter months, it's still just so beautiful. I mean, we're having a lot of foggy mornings, and for me, I live on a vineyard, so to wake up and sort of, it's dark still when I get up, and then to have kind of the sun is rising, and I mean, it's just,
We have true seasons.
We do, more than you would expect.
And they're all really great in their own way, so that doesn't happen everywhere.
Yeah, and I love that the days are getting a little longer again. I always love when we flip at the end of the year back to the days getting longer, not shorter.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
That makes me happy.
Definitely. It does me as well. So I just wanted to mention, because, you know, I love when wine shows up in popular culture
yes.
in any form.
Yes.
And I love music. So when wine shows up in music, and especially Sonoma County wine, I pay attention. So
yes.
I don't know if you've heard this song. It's a country song.
Oh.
I don't know how old it is. I think it's pretty new, actually. And it's called Cab in a Solo Cup.
I love it.
Have you heard it?
I don't think I have. Unless, you know, I have just heard recently a country song, and they actually mention Silver Oak.
That's
so. Is that the same?
Song.
Okay, I never knew the name of it.
Yes,
that is so funny.
So the main refrain is, "I'm finding out how a heartbreak feels with a Silver Oak, 1998, drinking cab in a solo in the cab of my truck."
So you know, I kind of feel a little sad about that for them because they sound sad, but then they're drinking Silver Oak. Cabernet in a solo cup in their
truck. Library vintage.
They're
not just drinking whatever they found.
They are drinking the good stuff.
Yeah. So they, I mean, I like this that song, they took their heartbreak into a positive direction.
And I also sort of love, because the show, The Good Stuff, that we're doing is all about, like, not really caring, not savoring. It's about enjoying, right? Like, seizing the moment. So I'm kind of like just in awe of Silver Oak in a solo cup. I mean,
in a truck. Well,
in a truck.
You're sad. But
why not?
You won't be sad for long.
You won't be sad. I mean, you take that first sip and you're just happy.
I think it's pretty amazing. And I kind of, now I want to get down to like how this lyric happened.
I know.
It must be based on some sort of real
life
event. We're
going to have to figure that out.
Maybe we have, you
know, send them a
Scotty
note.
McCreary, I think is the singer. Maybe we need to have him on and ask
some
questions.
God. That would be amazing.
And drink some wine.
And I also am not kind of thinking like, maybe at this point he wants to be solo because he then doesn't have to share his Silver Oak cab, right?
I mean, I have been there.
Right?
I've been there. I'm like, no, you don't need to come over.
It's so good.
Or you open a couple different wines.
Yes.
You're like, this one's just for me.
Yes.
That does happen.
I might be guilty of like opening the bottle I really want to drink before the guests come over, pouring myself a very, very healthy pour.
Yeah.
And then like as soon as someone comes in and I pour them a glass, I kind of refill my glass with a really good wine. So I'm kind of like a glass and a half of the bottle is like kind of guaranteed. For me.
And in a solo cup, you can hide
a lot.
All these things.
That's like a full like 16 ounces. That's like multiple. You might even have to refill that once.
Yeah.
From the bottle.
Depending on the size of the solo cup. Okay.
Yeah.
So we digress.
But, so much. But so much fun. We got to get to the bottom of that. I'm in.
Okay. I'm going to be on that after the show. today we have Andy Pay, owner of Pay Vineyards. And so we'll get into his story of sort of extreme viticulture to some extent, being way out on the West Sonoma coast. But before we welcome him in, do you want to give us a quick update of what you're up to, what's coming up for Sonoma County Wine Growers?
Yeah, so as we near the end of January already, we have our big annual meeting, Dollars and Cents, is on January 31st. So that's really where we recap and invite our growers in to understand kind of our plans for the year. And we have two great keynote presentations, one by an economist, Chris Thornburg, from Beacon Economy and or Economics, and then Ray Isle from Food & Wine Magazine is going to be kind of our closer keynote, talking about trends and what he's seeing from his role at Food & Wine Magazine. So that's going to be fun. And then literally the next day, we get on a plane and our marketing team, we head down to Houston, Texas, and it's going to be our first winemaker dinner series at the Toyota Center with the Houston Rockets.
Fantastic.
Basketball team. So fans of the Houston Rockets are going to get to come early and enjoy a paired, curated Sonoma County wine dinner, meet the winemakers and growers of three different wineries, and then stay for the game.
Have you invited Beyonce?
I have not yet.
I think you might want to.
That's like, we're really like owning the music today.
I mean, I can't help myself. She's from Houston.
I know. She might come. I love it. Lots of invites we're going to have to give out.
All right. When we come back, we will be on air with Andy Pay.
Drinking cab in a solo. Solo in the cab of my truck. I thought about taking it back to the store, 'cause it's the nicest bottle that I ever paid for. But then again, if I had that money back, I'd just...
Welcome back to The Good Stuff. We are on today with Andy Pay, owner of Pay Vineyards. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you so much. Very happy to be here.
Well, there's so much to talk about. You have been a farmer and a vintner in Sonoma County for nearly 20 years, I'd say.
Yeah, actually going on 27, but who's counting?
Wow.
I guess I just forgot.
How many
about
hours?
The
minutes?
Seven forgotten
days.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about how you all started.
Yeah, sure. So my brother Nick, who's a few years older than I am, we grew up in that famous wine growing region of Cleveland, Ohio.
Yep.
And obviously not a wine growing family. Where I'm from, people, you know, aspire to be dentists and doctors and plumbers or whatever, but grape growing was not on the radar.
Sure.
So we went to college on the East Coast, and my brother had gone to college with Hugh Davies, whose family started Schramsberg.
Oh, interesting.
And Hugh was a year ahead of my brother in college, and they were buddies, and they were sitting around drinking Schramsberg. That, you know, an older brother of his had left as a sample. And my brother was like, wait a second, your parents make wine? Like, how does that work? Like, what's going on? And so when he graduated, he went to the West Coast and started working harvests and was like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. No, mom and dad, I'm not going to take my LSATs. This is way more fun.
Always a comfortable conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you going to do with yourself? Make wine. So he went to Santa Rosa Junior College, took his, because he already had a college degree, but he had to take his organic chemistry and all that because he'd majored in history, and then went to UC Davis and got his master's in enology. And so in the meantime, I'm 4 years younger, so I finished college, had a slight short wayward period and very fun period in Manhattan as a banker. Manhattan was the fun part. Banking was not
fun. I was
going to
say,
right,
banking
right.
Fun?
That was the
wait, what just
part.
Happened?
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, it was mostly, I think, living in the East Village and,
yes,
you know.
Right after college. That's
right after
fun.
College, not needing to sleep very much. But yeah, so I ended up out on the West Coast after backpacking for a year in Asia. And where do you end up? You end up in Berkeley.
That's the natural
so
trajectory.
I was, yeah, you know, you run out of money and I had my house on my back, and so I was working in a bookstore and hanging out and trying to figure out what's next, and I thought I'd be a chef because mm-hmm. I love cooking, mm-hmm. and the farmer's markets in the East Bay are fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah,
and
Chez Panisse, the influence
Chez Panisse,
of that. Yep.
You know, and that was what was happening with me in the mid-90s. I was like, wow, you know, look at all this wonderful produce, follow your bliss, okay, I'll be a chef. Which, of course, somebody came along and burst that for me. And they said, yeah, you know what it's like to be a chef? You know, holidays, weekends, you know, normal civilians.
Right.
When they're out having fun, you're working and serving them.
Yeah.
And so I said, all right, well, that's not sounding so awesome. And my brother was in my ear and said, check out wine.
Interesting.
And
okay.
So I went and worked to harvest at Cane. In Napa for Chris Howell, and had just a wonderful experience there with him and with those wines. And then came back and became a retail buyer in the city. And that's
experience.
When my brain exploded. Because
wow.
At that point, it was more just like, I don't know what I want to do. I'm in my early 20s.
Yeah.
I could do anything.
World's your oyster.
Yeah.
Hey, Andy, I'm going to interrupt you because there's this bottle of wine sitting open in
I know,
front
Carissa,
of me. And
Carissa
I'm
doesn't
like
an open bottle of wine.
And an empty glass.
Yeah.
This is like a very depressing partnership right here. So I am just going to pour myself a little bit and make sure you all have some and then
okay, a moment of silence.
I know.
This is sacred.
There we go.
Okay, all is right in the world.
All is
now.
Right. I don't really care if any of you have some, but I'm good to go.
You need to fortify yourself. You're going to listen to me yap for the next however long. You know.
Well, we are.
And cheers.
Maybe there we should mention what we're drinking.
Yeah. Andy.
All right. We have a 2014 Pei Scallop Shelf Pinot Noir. And we make, five different wines from our vineyard. And so we have to give them different names to differentiate them because they're all estate. So Scallop Shelf, we're a former inland sea. We're right on the San Andreas Fault, and it was uplifted tens of millions of years ago. And we have scallop and nautilus fossils in our soils, and hence the name. Yeah,
amazing. So I want to go back to the retail experience, because I imagine that's when...
A big learning curve.
Yeah, I mean, that's when you really... I mean, it's the
that's
best experience...
That's when my head opened up.
There is, for tasting a lot of wine, a lot of different price points, a lot of different regions. You went... What did you sort of gravitate towards first?
Well, so really Côte de Rhône. So I'm 24 or 5 at this point. Mm-hmm. It's 1995, 94, 95. My brother and I are going around grape growing regions because he's got this whole plan that he's only leaking bits out that hey, you're the finance guy. I need someone who can do that. I want to do my own thing. Uh-huh. And... but I didn't know a lot about wine. I mean, we were brewing beer together in my apartment, and I was really into cooking. But I'd grown up drinking wine at the table, but wasn't that focused on it. Where he was growing up, he was paying attention that my dad was pouring Barolo and Burgundy and other things like that. I was pretty much an open book to the different wines out there. I'd had basically drinking Zinfandel because it was what I was first introduced to.
Sure,
but Côte de Rhône. The shop I worked at was the Jug Shop in San Francisco.
Yeah, a legendary place.
Well, Chuck Hayward was my boss.
Legendary
and
guy.
Chuck was very into Australian Shiraz, and that I learned pretty quickly was not my palate. So I was allowed to focus on the other wines. And so we were going all over California, Coupe down in Santa Barbara.
Oh, yeah.
The Shiraz there really caught my interest. And I was like, wow, this is great. And then Gigal Côte de Rhône was inexpensive. And then there was this Spanish Garnacha that I think was like $7 a bottle that was old vine that came out that I was like, what is that?
I think I drank that too.
Yeah.
It was like a little black cat on it or something.
Las Rocas was what it was. And so I was like, these are great. And I was just totally turned on. So it was really easy for me to sell them as well. And so I could sell a ton of these wines. And all these reps who could never sell the non-Australian wines to Chuck all of a sudden were coming in and educating this green guy, and my head blew up. And I was like, wow, Chardonnay from this region is different from that region. Vintages are different. I'll never get bored of this. And it was a really great education. So, you know, drinking, you know, 80 to 100 wines a week, bringing home open bottles to my roommates who were all grad students and were like, fantastic.
You can stay.
You were making a lot of friends, for sure.
Well, a couple of them were like, you have to stop this. I can't afford this habit once you leave.
Oh, yeah.
And you move out. But that's really where I opened up, and my brother said, okay, well, I want to do my own thing. And I was like, that's fantastic, but it looks like I tend to like European wines, and mom and dad are still alive, but their parents didn't leave us a Chateau or a Bordeaux or, you know, Chateau or a Domaine, so what are we going to do? And he said, well, look, that's why we were also traveling around looking at different areas in Oregon and Southern California and Northern California. And he said, we just got to get closer to the cold Pacific Ocean. And so that's kind of why we decided not to do Southern California, because the water's a little warmer there in the summer. And we were down in what's now the Santa Rita Hills. And we were up in Oregon, and we're like, it's kind of inland. And so we were really plumbing the North Coast. And we'd have different off days. So we would get in our truck and trespass on all the old logging roads. I hope no loggers are...
And not be shot at.
Okay. It's been 20 years. Well, and that's a good point.
I know. I was going to say, you live to talk about it.
This
here.
Is back in the dirty old days.
Oh, yeah. That's,
and
trespassing on property, not a good thing.
Well
especially
there,
not in Humboldt County. In Mendocino County, where I was spending a lot of my time, I would the day I found what became our property, I was camped out on a black sand beach up in Humboldt County.
Oh, wow.
And woke up. You know, after having my, I think I drank a bottle of Wild Hogs in that night.
Good choice.
It was sitting next to me and I was bivy sacked. And I got up in my truck and I was only about a mile off the ocean and I saw vines. And I was like, what? A mile off? So I got out of my truck and I walk up to this this double wide and these two guys come out and they're like, what you want? I'm like, it's 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning. What am I doing? And I decided to double down on stupidity because I was young and stupid. and said, hey, I see you have grapes growing, and I'm interested in grapes, which basically said nice cover for your weed crop.
Yeah, right,
and they're like, yeah, we're bottling. Come join us.
Wow. So stuff. Really?
Walked behind this falling down barn thing. There were like three or four hippies in their 60s.
Wow.
And there's an old bottling line, and I hopped on the line, and we started bottling their sparkling rosé, which was Breisland.
Wow.
And was like, this is cool. So then I got in my truck a little bit later, and I drove down the coast, and I seldom would pick up real estate listings, because oftentimes if you say you're looking for viticultural property from a realtor, they're like super, you know,
yes,
dollar signs start flipping. So I just stopped in, grabbed a couple of listings, and said, you know, what have you had that's open land within a couple miles of the ocean? And I drove down about an hour. That was in the town of Mendocino. I drove down about an hour or so down to what's in, you know, just south of Wallala, a little hamlet named Annapolis. And I hopped out and walked around, didn't even go up to the house, didn't even really register that there was a house there. But I walked out on the hilltop, and the wind was blowing. My shirt was luffing. It was cold, and it was an August day, and it was like maybe 60 degrees and windy. And I was like, okay, this sounds right. Because what Nick explained to me when I said, look, I really like European wines, he's like, hey, there's nothing special about Europe. I mean, there is something special about Europe, but there's nothing particularly unique to that area. I mean, it's a continent. But that you, what you like in these wines, you can probably get from other places too. And what it is you don't want to be, you don't like big fruity wines. You like wines with good acidity that don't are also not struggling with too much alcohol. That gives you a hot shot. You like balance. You want sight expressiveness, because what was I was particularly after my early days of Zinfandel and Cote d'Aron and Las Rocas, and what I was focusing on turned out to be more Nebbiolo and red Burgundy and white Burgundy, but couldn't really afford the red and white Burgundies, but the inexpensive Langues and things like that I could. And I liked that I could tell the difference if that was on sandy soils, if that was on clay soil. Because I was getting new to wine. I was like, that's cool. Why? Yeah. Why is that? And so Nick said, look, you like to be able to see in the wine that you're drinking and smelling the story of the place and what is unique about that place. And it's not you know, encumbered by too much fruit or winemaking or whatever. So we can do that in California or Oregon or wherever we were looking. We just got to get away from that beautiful California sun so that we can make wines that have elegance and balance and sight expressiveness. And so where we are out in Annapolis, which is just about 3 miles off the ocean, we're right up against the Pacific Ocean. And so for, I mean, I think most of the listeners, you guys understand the Pacific Ocean. You understand microclimates. When you have a beautiful day in Healdsburg and it's 85, 90 degrees and you get out to the coast, it's probably 60 to 65.
Right, yeah.
And that's because that cold Pacific ocean does not warm up in the summer. And your weather comes on shore because it's warm in the interiors. Hot air rises, creates a vacuum, pulls in that marine layer, pulls in that wind. And if you're in that inversion layer, so below 1,000 feet with some kind of break in your ridge, you're going to be sitting in that cold, chilly area. And so your sugars will accumulate more slowly. Your acids will stay in the grapes longer. You'll have a longer growing season. You can have more phenolic development, potentially more different flavors in your grape skins, potentially more interesting wine.
But the key to that is really being at somewhat elevation, which is, you know, Sonoma County is one of the only places you can really find that. You're close to the coast. You're getting all the cool climate, but you're at elevation, so you get enough sun to ripen.
100%. If I was down on the coast in Sea Ranch,
it's not going to work.
Juice would never happen.
It's not going to work,
Not only would it not ripen, it would just rot.
Yeah,
my
right.
unripe grapes would rot. I mean, it's tricky where we are. Every microclimate growing grapes in the world, you've got your particular characteristics and your particular problems. Mm-hmm. Our struggle or challenge is probably the right word to put. Our challenge is pressure from, mildew pressure and things of that nature. Now we, of course, have just extreme, unpredictable, long periods of weird weather.
Yeah.
But we're all
everywhere.
Yeah. Right. You're not
everywhere.
The only ones anymore. Right.
Yeah. Challenge everywhere.
So I think we're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
But when we come back, I mean, there's still so much to talk about. we haven't really gotten to the part where you established the vineyard, because I think you planted it yourself, so we'll get
to
that.
We did, yeah. No, we've just decided to buy the land. It's 1996.
Okay, we have a lot to cover when we come back with Andy Pay. Stuff with Andy Pay of Pay Vineyards. And wow, I mean, I'm just thinking about those early days and finding that site.
1996 in Sonoma County.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
And on the outskirts of Sonoma County, as we're talking about.
I mean, Pinot hadn't really emerged in a big way yet, let alone, you know, you have a long history of doing Viognier and Syrah and Rhone varieties based on, I'm sure, some of your early love for Rhone wines. Tell us about planting the site once you found it.
So we bought the land. It was an old sheep ranch and apple orchard. It had been homesteaded, and in sometime in the 1800s they started planting apple trees because they were for eating. Drying on site. There's a kiln on site, drying on site, and taking down to San Francisco to feed all the people coming out for the gold rush. They also had different types of apples for cider, so higher acid, and also for baking, so low water. We have all those on the property still. So if you go along every once in a while, you grab an apple, you're like, oh, that's not the one I wanted. That must have been a baking apple. So they planted orchards sometime in the probably 1860s or something like that, and we still have a bunch of those trees. And then subsequent to that, sheep. And so when I showed up, it had been a retirement property for about 10 years, but before that it was the same family through many generations, and they kind of were no longer commercially viable by the 1950s or 60s, and they started working for the road and the PG&E and things that you do way out on the coast. So we didn't really have to clear. We just had all these paddocks.
Amazing.
This was a hilltop with grass, you know, wild grass. But I was looking for lichen and fern and moss and things that would tell me that there was moisture either in the air or in the ground. And so, of course, when Nick came out, he dug soil pits, checked out soil, but also water. We developed wells. And then we planted in 98. So it took us a couple of years to figure out what we had, you know, as far as developing water. And we did put in a reservoir out there because even though we did have a couple of wells and they did produce, they eventually all failed. And we kind of knew that this was going to be a bit of an issue. And really, we only needed water to establish, because one of the things about California is we have a desert climate. We don't get rain in the summer, except when we do now.
Except when you
June.
Do, I know,
right?
But and so we developed that reservoir and then planted in '98. And the idea was 30 acres, which is, in hindsight, we were, you know, young and naive is really important.
Ambitious.
You're kind to say ambitious. I say young and naive because, you know, we were in our 20s and we're like, hey, we got nothing to lose. And, sure, of course, this is going to work. Nickel.
And banking will always be there for me in New York. So,
No, I did that. I never have to go back and be like, right, that wasn't it for me. We decided that 30 acres would be a good initial planting. So Nick would make the wine. We would farm together. I would sell it. No problem.
Yeah, easy.
Luckiest thing for us was that Vanessa Wong came along.
Right.
Vanessa is our winemaker. and she has a storied history. She went to Davis as well, and then went to University of Bordeaux, and then worked at Jean Gros and Von Romanet and Lafitte in Bordeaux, and came back, and she was at the time the winemaker Peter Michael in Sonoma County. And she was putting in a vineyard for them out south of us in what's now the Fort Ross Seaview AVA. And she had run into my brother a little bit way back in the days at Davis, and she's like, oh, wow, you know, Nick Pei, you're growing Pinot Noir up in the middle of nowhere out on the coast. Maybe I should go talk to you a little bit about, you know, what you're planting and what you're doing. And so she came out and visited, and she tasted some young vines, some third leaf Chardonnay that we had on vine just to play around with. We didn't make wine out of it in September of 20. And she was like, wow, this is so different than Chardonnay I'm used to from the areas that Peter Michael gets their Chardonnay. And she was like, I kind of want to do this. And so then she became our winemaker, which kicked Nick into the vineyard. And that's when all the wheels kind of meshed.
But wasn't there also a romantic
connection? Yeah, I was going to say, when are we getting to that?
We try not to put too fine a line on that.
I know.
It's kind of like one of those old school things. Like, she got a vineyard, we got a winemaker. It's all
good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's the history of Sonoma County, right?
Totally.
Like, crazy notions that end up being very successful, and you meet the right people at the right time who have the right vision.
Yeah, I mean, you know, passionate young people looking to the future, wanting to do something. I mean, I think that that's definitely what got them talking, you know, is their interest in wine and what they're doing and why they're doing it. And then I think they saw the spark in one another. So, yes, they did get married about a year and a half after she joined us. So,
But I love that story because I think, you know, as you mentioned, you didn't inherit some chateau or family legacy of winemaking. And it really goes to show, like you said, in your youth, with a dream, with a lot of hard work, with the ability to take those risks, the chance, or taking, just being able and willing to take those risks, it's part of, I think, what makes Sonoma County and California, as we say, the new world of wine, really exciting, because you don't have to have that history to be able to come in and be able to create the history of the region. And that's super exciting. And what a great legacy you're leaving behind in what you did in the 90s.
It's
really awesome.
It's been really, really exciting to watch Sonoma County develop that way.
Yeah.
I mean, as we've been developing, but to your point, you don't have to necessarily go the way we went, which is to buy land, plant a vineyard, wait, don't buy fruit, and then make wine from your own fruit and then grow it over 20 years. I know a lot of people, friends of mine, who, you know, bought fruit, custom crush it, whatever, and I mean, there are just so many young people who, with ambition and a desire to make great wine, who just go for it.
And alongside also the multi-generational farmers and winemakers. And so I think we get this, like, great mix of, like, history and legacy, but also entrepreneurial spirit in our wine community that you don't get in every region. And I think it is part of our secret sauce, so to speak.
Keeps it vibrant.
Sonoma.
Yeah. Yeah, very vibrant.
And interesting, and planting different things and making different wines, because you're allowed to take a little bit of that risk to do that and create the path for the region.
100%.
So it's exciting.
And it felt a little isolating the first 10 years.
Well, you were in Annapolis by choice. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, self-selection there.
But you're doing your own thing, right?
No,
and you're like,
true.
You're starting your own business. You don't have people to look to and say, you know, how do I do this? What should I be doing? And I was fortunate. Five other wineries and myself, we started an organization called the West Sonoma Coast Vintners. And the idea was, you know, hey, it's different out on the coastal part of Sonoma County. Why is it different? We're not really sure, although we taste the wines and we think they're different. And let's start tasting one another's wines and start researching the area. And then we started this organization, and then all these other wineries joined. And, you know, over the last 10 years, we've learned a lot. But we also just got to be around one another and say, well, what's going on with you?
Yeah.
What are the things you're facing? And that's been community.
Yes.
And that community is really wonderful. It's been rewarding to me and helpful to me as a business person.
So
2001 was our first vintage. And actually, I think that's when I might have met you, Virginie.
I
was back in the bad old days, the first 5 years of Pei.
I drove out there.
Whoa.
I drove out there. And
you didn't get lost. You found it.
It was an amazing experience because there you were. I mean, three very young entrepreneurial people
That's so cool.
Having you lived in this great little house, jazz music was, you know, records were playing, and there was some great cheese and charcuterie, and I was like, you know, this is amazing what is happening all over Sonoma County. And just to see the vision from the very early days was really cool. And we walked the vineyard, and, you know, you get, like you say, you get a real sense of the temperature and the coolness out there.
Yeah, I mean, it has a really strong sense of place. And I think, you know, many, many vineyards do. And I think that those are the ones that tend to thrill people and why we get excited about wine. I mean, it's a beverage, right? But it's the story and the sense of place and all those things that we attach to it that are in our memories, so that when we're having a glass of wine, all those memories and those emotions are fired. And that's what makes wine not just a beverage. And I mean, that's be true for lots of different foods, but that's what does it for me. And I think if people who come out to our vineyard and visit it and you walk it, you're like, got it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Absolutely. Like so many places in Sonoma County. Okay, well, we are going to take another break.
Yeah.
When we come back, maybe we'll get a little bit more into the wines. And I want to talk about just your perspective on buying a piece of land.
Okay. Sounds
when we
good.
Come back on Sounds the good
start. Everyone, welcome back to The Good Stuff, and I'm super excited to have Andy Pei in studio with us today. And we've been talking just about buying land and the entrepreneurial spirit and how just community and collaboration in Sonoma County, mixed with a lot of risk-taking and just guts, I guess I would say, and tenacity. But we're drinking this incredible 2014 wine, and I just want to, Andy, ask you, like, how do people find out about you? Where do they get the wine? Can they come visit you? Do you offer them a puffy jacket when they arrive? Because they're not prepared for the coastal wind and weather.
We've got boots in every sizes.
Okay, perfect.
I actually love it. Don't wear your Manolos.
All right, yeah. No heels on the coast, okay? Let's not do that.
We would love you to come and visit. You can find our wines at Pei Vineyards, P-E-A-Y, vineyards.com. Join the mailing list. If you join the mailing list, then you can come visit. And
awesome.
We have a little section there. You can schedule to visit us either in Cloverdale at the winery or out on the coast where Nick will be, my brother, will be your host. He'll walk you around the vineyards. A little cheese plate, as Virginie knows,
yeah,
we like our
go.
Cheese.
I love it.
Shout out to Soyoung from Andante Dairy. We almost all exclusively nice. Serve her cheeses and some other Sonoma cheeses. We would love to have you.
And what do you all grow and make?
We are predominantly
wines?
Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
We're 70% Pinot Noir, and then Chardonnay and Syrah equal amounts, and then a little bit of Viognier, which is kind of an atypical Viognier.
Yeah.
Super bright, crisp, minerally, high acid, all the things you don't think about when you think about Viognier.
Right,
but mostly Pinot Noir. We're a 53-acre vineyard now.
Yep, okay.
All the vines are about 25-ish years old. We planted those initial 30 and then the rest in 01.
That's awesome. Well, I want to get to more about the 2014 wine, but I want to talk a little bit about, because obviously we work with the farmers around Sonoma County, so talk a little bit about the vineyard and just some of your viticultural practices and kind of what matters to you and what you think about.
Yeah, I mean, our viticultural practices have been fairly consistent since day one, although we were new to farming. I mean, Cleveland Heights, Ohio is not farm country.
Yeah.
My brother's quite bright and is a reader, when we planted, we were farming organically. I think maybe we were using Roundup the first couple of years because my brother was like, I don't know. And then in the early 2000s, and then we realized, okay, there are things out there now that we can use. So an undervine tiller, for example.
Yep.
And we kept on having to buy new ones because those things break like crazy. So we are certified organic now, but we've been farming organically for 20 years.
Yep.
And, you know, now people tend to we kind of avoid capital letter groups. So these days people call regenerative agriculture. I guess we farm that way, although we would never call ourselves regenerative agriculturalists. But, you know, we don't till and we make our own compost from our own waste.
Nice.
And we're on biodiesel solar power and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea is just to keep your boots in the vineyard. That's the best way to to really be a meticulous farmer and understand what's going on. And the adage, of course, that we make wine in the vineyard is a tired adage, but it's true.
Yeah.
We are way out there so that we don't have to bring the fruit in and do anything in the winery to adjust it. You know, where it's cool, so you don't have to adjust the acidity, you don't have to de-alk or add sugar if it's too cold, whatever. And so we're not going to do that from a farming perspective. We're not going to change anything. So that's how we think about it. If we're making changes in the vineyard, it's going to be okay. At the end of the year, Vanessa and Nick will talk and say, what can we do differently in the growing season?
So I have to ask, Andy, because you started by loving a specific style of wine, and then your brother says, hey, I think we can achieve that. When was that moment when you're drinking your wine, you're like, hey, we did it?
I mean,
did
you know,
have that moment? Is it now? You did it.
I try.
I'll tell you, you did
hopefully
it.
Hopefully, every year.
I never try to. I don't feel like it's a finished project.
Yeah.
It's always in process. I'm always. I feel like our wines are getting better and better. The vines are getting older. We're getting wiser about how to achieve the things that we want to achieve. But I mean, I've definitely had moments with certain wines, particularly if they have a little bit of age on them. I love Pinot Noir. Syrah is actually my true love.
I love Syrah.
And
too.
I think I had it with my 05 La Bruma, where I was like, this is really good. I mean, I drink a lot of Syrah from all over the world at all price points, and I would hold this up to anybody. And so I do. I actually have none of that wine left because I blind taste people on that all the time against some of the great wines of the world. And so that would probably be the one.
I love that. I love
that
Syrah.
Too. I do as well. I think everybody says that, and yet...
Y'all don't buy it.
What I know.
I do.
I do buy it.
So,
you know, yes.
We'll be right back with Andy Pay.
All right, well, welcome back to our wrap-up of the good stuff. I'm Carissa Cruz here with my co-host Virginie Boone, and we have Andy Pay on the air with us today. And our final segment, Andy, so you know, Virginie always share what good stuff wine we're going to drink on a Tuesday night. Basically, the premise is don't save the good stuff wine, open it and enjoy it, because you're making more, other winemakers are making more, other growers are growing more grapes. So I'm just going to say, because we're drinking the 2014... I'm going to drink this on Tuesday night, hopefully.
I'm drinking it right now.
Because I'm drinking it now.
I'm drinking it right now, and I'm going to drink it again.
And I'm going to drink it again, because this is just an awesome wine. Why do you bring us a little bit older wine today?
Well, so I...
10 years old, actually.
When I first heard about your show, I got your message. I understood. And I am 100% on the team of every night's an occasion.
Yeah.
You don't know how long you're going to be around. You know, I'm now in my mid-50s, and I unfortunately... You know, it's happening, you know, and so...
Age happens. If you're lucky. So,
you know?
Well,
if you're
maybe
lucky. Fortunately,
age happens. Yeah.
So every night's an occasion. I am not saying, oh, that's a pizza wine or that's a Monday or Tuesday wine. Every night I'm going for it. And then also, I know that you're both familiar with our wines. And so I'm a big proponent of drinking wine, not only young, but also with age, because it changes.
It does.
And I think our wine gets a little bit... more interesting with a little bit of age, and it's got some florality but some earthiness. Some there are things going on now, tobacco and blood and things that I think are really kind of compelling. And so I wanted to show that to you.
What do you remember about this vintage?
Yeah, so 14 was a very good vintage. We're very excited. It's very aromatic on release, but these wines, they're pretty showy as well. But I've been finding my 14 Pinot Noirs are now moving into the more developed aromas, so getting more dried floral notes and things like that. So that's why I think they're actually even more interesting, because it's not just, hi, how are you?
We have a bubble bell we occasionally ring on the show. I think we need a Pinot Noir bell. Like ding, 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 ding.
Or just maybe a saxophone or something. I don't know.
Some amazing instrument. But just remind everyone, how do they find your wines? They sign up. Where do they go?
Yeah, you go to our website, payvineyards.com. You join the mailing list. We release wine twice a year. We also have some wines available on the site year-round. Restaurants in the Bay Area are very supportive. There are a couple retail shops in San Francisco. Or you can always just come on by. We have open houses twice a year in the spring that we announce, and we would love to meet you.
That's great. Lots of good stuff today on The Good Stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us today on The Good Stuff Hour. Thank you so much, Andy Pay. We're glad that you could come in studio.
Thank you for having me.
from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember, drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.